Hey, fellow youth, this is Kathy.
And this is Audrey.
This is Nicole.
Still.
Oh, I made it weird. I'm sorry. Anyway, we're here today to discuss American Street by Ibi Zoboi. I hope I said her name correctly. I'm sorry if
I've
I
been
didn't.
Pronouncing it Ibi Zoboi.
Ibi Zoboi.
But without anyone here to tell us differently,
Yeah.
Could be anything.
I definitely said it differently out loud than I've been saying it in my head. So let's just assume I'm wrong.
Yep. And we all know how it's spelled, and that's all that matters.
Yeah. And this is Nicole's book, and she has the most beautiful NPR voice. So let's have her go through with the summary of what's going
on
here.
It's my book. Mm-hmm. It belongs to me. No. I chose this book, and the summary of the book is basically it's about a Haitian immigrant. Her name is Fabiola, and she's immigrating to America with her mother from Haiti. Yep. And so the very first like page, it opens on them immigrating. They're already in America. They're at some New Jersey like center as they're going through. She gets through, her mom gets detained, and that's where the story starts. So a lot of it is about her missing her mother and trying to figure out how this new world, like American culture and the world, works without her mother. So she's moving in with her family in Detroit. Both her mother and she were supposed to be doing that, and now her mother's been separated. So the whole book is about that, and then it's about her family and her learning to be American and learning what that means, especially in the location where they are, which is Detroit. And that's part of the reason I picked the book, because it's got lots of local interest, and we found lots of local references.
Oh, yeah. This entire book was just, I know that reference! I know what that is! I know where that is! I was so proud. But yeah, so could you tell me, like, what are the relatives that she moves in with?
Okay. So she moves in with her Aunt Jo. She calls her Matant Jo?
Mm-hmm.
Aunt Jo.
No idea how she pronounces it.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure, and you're going to hear a lot of bad pronunciations. Just, like, prepare yourself. Her Aunt Jo, who is her mother's sister, who moved from Haiti years ago, but she's been sending them money and giving them, like, things so that Fabiola can go to school and learn English and so they can all prepare to move over to America. And Matant Jo has these three daughters, Princess, Pri for short, Prima Donna, Donna for short, and Chantal, which I think I'm pronouncing correctly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she moves in with her through those three cousins. Princess and Prima Donna are twins. And they are described differently enough that I got a little confused, because they're twins, but they're supposedly like built and
fraternal.
Look entirely different. Okay, fraternal twins. But still, I imagine like really small Donna and really big Pri, just based on their like personalities and their stories.
Yeah.
And then Chantal is the oldest. And so she's the one who's like going to college. She's got shit to do. She's always reading. And I think my favorite one of the lines was when Pri is making fun of her. And she's like, you would fuck a book if you could. And she's like, I would. And she goes into this wonderful rant about how she would totally marry a book. So that is Chantal. Who's next?
Yeah, then we have some side characters. Mm-hmm. We have Kasim, who ends up being the love interest for Fabiola in Detroit. There is Dre, who's his friend and also Donna's boyfriend in the series. And then I included her, even though she's kind of a side one, Imani, because that's her non-relative
new friend,
which I think is a really important relationship to have.
And I think she's the only new friend that she, like, really comes
essentially.
From. She's, like, basically the only one that matters, the only one she's seen with.
Because her cousins are known as the Three Bs, and they're a very close-knit and cohesive group. And then there's my favorite character, Bad Leg, also known as Papa Legba, who is kind of an interesting transient, possibly voodoo god that lives on the corner outside of her house.
He adds an element of magical realism, makes the book very on the line at certain parts.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Is this magic?
Yep. And I didn't change the order here, so I'm just going to start off quickly with why you should read this book. And we're going to end with Nicole, since she's the one who recommended it. And I'm going to say you should read this book if you are one of those people who likes to cry from teen literature. Like, what was that book about the cancer kids?
Fault in Our Stars.
Yeah,
this can't be that sad. I never read it, but this can't be that sad.
I never read it, but I mean, it's,
yeah, I have no basis.
I'd say
it's
this is more realistic. This is more realistic, I think. So it's a little...
There's a lot of realistic sadness in it.
Mm-hmm. But it's great. And if you love magical realism, hit this book up. It's solid.
Yeah, this book is super well written. It's also really interesting in terms of the type of culture that was explored in this book is like really different than my experience, even though I also am from Michigan parts. So sheep farm. So that was something I found really interesting, was the kind of like different, totally different experience that Fabiola had, even though she like came to the same state as me.
Even though you grew up, what, like a 20-minute drive away?
It was more like an hour.
Yeah, I was like, didn't you're from Traverse City. Isn't that far?
No, I grew up north of Detroit.
Whoa, okay. Whoa.
Yep. 36
What's it
mile.
Called? Where are you?
Romeo.
Never heard of it.
3,000 people lived there.
When, oh, so
and I was
big
a
town.
5-minute drive out of that, so we had lots of cow neighbors.
Lots of cows around. I forgot. You were a farm girl.
Yep.
Yeah. We ran against them from track, but we all, like my high school, but we also ran against schools from Detroit, so we were right in the middle.
Yeah. I'm from Connecticut, so. But it's fine. I've lived here a long time. So I also got to recognize some of the Detroit things, which was nice.
I mm-hmm. recognized none of the Detroit things. I won't lie.
I think I just mentioned
baby.
Street.
I was like, where is the do you, all right.
Sure.
Oh, this is gonna pretty much be my discussion point, is all about the nuances in this book about Detroit that you don't actually need to know to read the book, I'm gonna add, because the author isn't from Detroit. She's from Brooklyn. I think she's only visited it based on the acknowledgments she made in the back. So
yeah, I mean, it didn't detract from the book that I was like, no idea what she's talking about.
Yeah, I think the author originally is from Haiti, too, and she also immigrated. So it's kind of a little bit, I mean, I wouldn't say it's biographical, but she brings her own perspective to it. And I would say that's why I would think you should read it. That's why I wanted to read it, partially because it takes place in Detroit, but also partially because it's a story by someone immigrating to America, and I just wanted, I haven't seen a lot of that from I mean, I'm sure there's tons of books out there, but I haven't read a lot of books like that. And so I wanted to read more about it and just get the perspective, especially now with so many things that are going on. And like just it's just good to have to understand a little bit of the of an immigrant story. And, you know, it depends entirely on the country you're coming from, how old you are, and like what your situation is. But it sounds like they go further into it and explain her story a bit more. But mostly I just liked it. I loved it because the writing was good. Audrey was right. I loved it because the characters were really interesting and new to me. I liked all the things that were new, even the slang that made me slightly uncomfortable because hearing it read in my head is ludicrous. But that's why I think you should read it. I think that just the perspective is really good, and just the stuff that you pick up on before Fabiola even picks up on it, because you're from America and know the culture, and like realizing what it must feel like to be completely unaware.
The outside perspective was super interesting.
Because you learn, you figure out a lot of things about the book, a lot of things that are going on way before Fabiola does. Like, I think you get to a place where you're like, I clearly know what's going on. I know that something's going to go wrong. Like, her, spoilers are fine, right?
Yeah, yeah,
spoilers. But you find out that her family, there's like this whole undercurrent of drugs in the entire thing. And you find out that her family's involved. And from pretty much the beginning, I could kind of tell.
Yeah.
They were hinting at it pretty well. And they're obviously making it pretty obvious that like the only one who's really not picking up on it is Fabiola.
Oh, yeah.
Because she would have no idea what to look for. I mean, and it would never occur to her because of who she is and where she comes from. It would just never occur to her that her family would be involved.
That's yeah, that's part of the reason why I stopped. Okay, so I got the book right after our last recording. I read most of it in the next few days. Then I stopped because I was like, this is going to be a sad book.
Yep.
I don't want to read anything sad. And I literally stopped until a couple hours before this because I was putting it off for so long because she didn't see it coming, but I knew what was coming.
I guessed what was coming, but I do want to just make a point that I didn't know it was this sad when I picked it. I hadn't finished it yet when I announced it last. So I'd read through most of it, but the actual, like, super sad death doesn't come till the end. And, like, you can kind of see it coming. It's predictable, but that doesn't make it worse.
No,
it's just you can, the fact that you can see it coming and she can't see it coming is what actually makes it way more stressful because you're watching it going, there's no way this is going to turn out any other way.
I didn't see the death coming exactly. Okay. Until like with they were until they were like at the place and the detective saw her and was like, you're here, and I was like, oh god damn it. But I knew that like just based on what was going on in the book, there was like no way that there was gonna be a happy ending.
I found out it was inspired by Trayvon Martin
before
I finished it, so I was like, nope.
Yeah, if I'd known that, I obviously would have been like, okay, somebody dies. But as soon as I found out that Qasim was going to, like, a party in the middle of, like, a rich neighborhood to sell drugs where there were probably lots of police, I was like, okay, so he's either going to go to jail, which was, like, my first thought.
Yeah,
because I like to believe,
that's what I thought.
Because this is a terrible sentence, but I like to believe in the positive, that, like, the upside, the possibilities that he'd still be alive.
Yeah.
But, like, definitely he would have gone to jail at least. But, of course, of course not. He was just
shot.
Immediately dead.
Yeah.
So, yep, he was just shot by police as he was running away.
Yep.
You know, not super stressful and realistic at all.
So what I've done here is picked a super positive book. And on that note, should we segue into my first point, which is entirely about
the
death.
The thing we've been talking about.
Yeah. Death. It's all about death. Because I think that while it sounds super depressing, this book's one of the big themes is death, and they address it a lot of different ways. Like, they even tell the story of Kasim, obviously, who's the only one in the book who actually, I think, no, he's not. There are two people who die.
Yes.
I totally forgot about that.
Right. Yeah.
I don't want to be the one to do all the spoilers.
Okay, I'll do the spoilers right here. So essentially at the end, Fabiola, she's told that she can get her mom out of, like, this prison where she's being held by, you know,
it's a detention center.
Yeah, by, like, the border control.
Oh, yeah, detention center in New Jersey.
Yeah, who obviously will, you know, do a request from a local police force in a different state.
Yeah, that was weird.
No, anyway, but anyway, they essentially they'll say, we'll get your mom out if you help us nail this one guy who happens to be her cousin's abusive boyfriend, Dre, who you know is evil because he has an eye patch.
He has an eye patch, and I couldn't get over the eye patch because I still imagine all eye patches like pirate eye patches.
That's what I was imagining.
So he's just like a gangster, but he's also got like a pirate eye patch on, and people just take him
seriously.
What other
kind of eye patch would you have?
I assume that now maybe they make them look a little different. They're not as piratey. It's not like a circle with a little strap, but honestly, I can't imagine anything else.
No. Nope.
Yeah. I was hoping maybe it was like a pimp eye patch and it's like white.
With a single diamond in the middle. And like
rhinestones around the edge. A pimp patch.
I look forward to a day where a character with like a facial problem isn't a villain other than that one blue book with the wonder. Other than that one. I'm just looking forward for that day.
I think for Dre, it was specifically because they were like, he's into violent stuff. And I think at some point you find out that his eye got, like, stabbed out. Or there's a part where his eye patch comes off.
Yeah.
And you find out that
it's right before he dies.
Yeah. So he's the other one that dies. And that one we're not really that sad about.
No.
Well, I don't know. When you read it, the other thing about this book is you get points of view of different characters. Yeah. And when you see it, you, like, realize he's totally a product of his situation, of, like, his sadness.
I mean, that's one of those things where, like, it's his, like, situation is sad, but that doesn't absolve him of how shitty he is.
I have a feeling Dre might have ended up a dick no matter where he was.
Yeah.
I think just his personality, but it definitely, that's another good part. Go ahead.
The part of his story that, like, really got me was, like, so he accidentally shot,
His girlfriend's dad. Yeah.
And so, like, in his story, he was like, he couldn't forget it, but he could, like, date Donna and, like, abuse her to, like, make her feel how horrible he felt about it. And I was like, you're a dick.
They believe that they love each other.
No.
Actually, that's the one thing that stuck with me after I finally finished the book earlier today. I was like, wait, no one found out that he was the one that... No one knows.
He goes to his grave.
So there's another character kind of that's like in the background called like Uncle Q. And he's like the big, big drug lord person who's like...
He's what makes it possible for this like super intense storyline to be going on with teenagers.
Yeah.
Brought to you by Uncle Q's Like You.
Yeah. And Uncle Q has Dre shoot someone, but Dre is like 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
So he accidentally shoots their dad.
Oh dear. Oh no.
Boys being boys.
You don't have 7-year-olds do your assassinations for you. I don't know.
My guess is it was like one of those weird gang things where you have to get like jumped in. And they're like, to prove that you're, you know, a guy and you're not going to rat us out to the police, shoot this person and then we'll hold it over your head forever.
Yep.
Yeah. So it does. Yeah, you're right. I think I like your point, Kathy, that they tell lots of people's perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes you feel for Dre, but I don't think it absolves him of what he has done. Because there's like, I don't know. There are lots of people who do horrible things that are like have had horrible things done to them, but that doesn't change the fact that like you killed someone or like he was super abusive. Like that doesn't change
that.
It's
also pretty clear that like lots of people have made crap decisions based on like their lives, but not everybody's an asshole like Dre because everyone around him is pretty much in a similar situation. They don't have the same thing where they accidentally killed the wrong guy with 7, which I'm sure fucks you up.
Yeah.
But they all come from hard times. They all come from pretty poor backgrounds and they're all making money however they can manage it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that, but, like, in a different situation, he might just be, like, a shitty douchebag stockbroker.
Yep.
Like,
I imagine that. Yeah. Probably still with an eye patch for some other reason.
Yeah. Someone
probably
who doesn't tip.
Probably
you know.
Some lady punched him in the eye because he was being a jerk or something. Yeah, he probably doesn't tip. Oh, he's probably loud during movies. I'm just thinking of all the mundane, terrible things a person can do.
Talks down to retail staff, you know.
Yeah, he probably kicks puppies.
Probably still an abusive asshole. I don't know. Like, he still comes off as... I don't know. It doesn't change the fact that he did what he did.
Yeah, but, like, you can be an abusive asshole and not be a murderer.
So I feel like before we even knew everyone was going to die, there was the hint just based on who everyone was in their situation that, like, death was around and death was going to happen. And another...
This is the west side of Detroit. Will there be death?
Will someone die? And so there was that, but then there was actual, like, personification of death, which was Papa Legba. No. Who's the personification of death? It's Dre, but it's Dre, who's the god that he's based off of.
I can't remember.
I can't either. She does a really good, that's another thing I like. She does a good job of drawing back to her culture each time. So she's very religious, and it's voodoo that
It's like a combination of like Christianity and traditional.
They believe in like spirits that protect you and different gods that protect you. And she prays to, I think it's Luas. I looked it up. I tried really hard to figure out how to pronounce Luas, but they're like spirits guides.
Yeah.
So she prays to her spirit guides. And I thought Papa Legba was death, but he's
not. No, he's like the god of crossroads.
Right. He's the god of crossroads.
And doors.
He feels like an omen. And I know that his main thing is omen, so maybe that's why I keep associating him with death, because he sings. So Papa Legba spends the entire book. This is his thing. Papa Legba is basically like a homeless, just transient guy. Basically, we don't know anything about him except that he's kind of a beaten up, run down old guy who sits on a bucket.
That's Bad Leg. Who then?
Yeah, he's also Papa Legba.
Yeah,
so there's a homeless dude.
I forgot that he has another name.
In her neighborhood called Bad Leg.
They call him Bad Leg. Right.
But when Fabiola sees him, she recognizes him as Papa Legba, which is this like crossroads god from her like voodoo heritage. So that's where the Papa Legba part comes in, and he is
Baron
kind of
Samedi. That's who it is.
Both, yes,
Baron Samedi is the one that she believes Dre represents. I know that she keeps talking about that, but Papa Legba, or Bad Leg, sits on his bucket all day singing, like, kind of songs that sound crazy to everybody. Everybody thinks that Bad Leg's nuts, because he sits and he sings these songs that, like, kind of rhyme, kind of have meaning, but everyone just thinks he's a crazy guy who sings. And then Fabiola actually starts to listen, and she starts to feel like she can hear omens and warnings and pull signs out of his songs, and so she pays attention to them, and if you pay attention, you can kind of get an idea of, it's really good foreshadowing, definitely.
Yeah. He was my favorite character with his magical, like, the whole magical realism element really strong in all of the Caribbean books I've read and things like that comes from this. It kind of comes in with him, and I really enjoyed that he was this kind of half god that was present in this, taking a cue from Rihanna, hopeless place.
Well, it was interesting too, because he did try and help her as much as he could, and he did help her at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did help her at the end, but as the situation evolved, his advice changed.
Because
one of the most frustrating parts for me of this book was right after she's like, "That man is Papa Legba," she ignored the warning he gave her, which was to distrust the woman in the brown coat.
Which is not even that obtuse and obscure.
Well,
you can figure out what that
means. It was the woman in all brown, which could be a UPS man.
Yeah, but then she met the detective
in a brown coat. In all brown. You have to know.
Well, which is also
he's not saying beware the UPS lady.
I know.
But I know what you mean. It could be confusing.
And I also kind of felt like Fabiola at that point, because he says, beware the woman in all brown. I know this. I've accepted him as a semi-god character. And part of me is like, maybe it's not her. Mostly because I'm from Grosse Pointe. And I'm like, come on. Hashtag not all men.
Oh, God.
I'm just like, yeah. But the other part of me is just like, I don't know. Maybe it's from my point of view of, being white and being privileged in the system where I don't have to fear the police as much, that I'm just like, maybe she's not the villain. Let's give her a shot.
I just like the way that the detective tries to get Fabiola to give her inside advice on Dre. They want to they basically suspect Dre of selling drugs that caused this white girl's death, and they want to arrest him. So she contacts Fabiola and she's like, if you can help me arrest him, I'll help your mom, and you'll get your mom back. I just the problem was maybe because I don't. Because I'm more familiar with the system, I don't know how she would actually have any influence over getting her mom back. So that was point number one, where I was like, no.
Yeah, she spent a lot of time with big plans, but no idea how to accomplish them.
And then this kind of goes into my point a little bit about Grosse Pointe. Grosse Pointe is rich. It's not that powerful.
Yeah.
And I think they did a good job of not trying to make it even sound that powerful. I think that they probably wouldn't have ended up at those parties if they were powerful people, because they were just people from Detroit and random places. Are you talking about Grosse Pointe?
I meant powerful enough to get someone out of being deported. Grosse Pointe can't do that.
You mean the police of Grosse Pointe?
Yeah.
I thought you were saying that they're making Grosse Pointe and all the people sound.
Yeah, not like even
she's
way.
All the way in New Jersey though, so one in Michigan's gonna do anything for her.
There's zero sway there.
Yeah, and
I get what you're saying.
The other thing too is it was weird to me how she knew who Fabiola was right when she showed up, and then also you know, it just seems like taking advantage of someone who is like just come to this country to be like, inform on your cousin's boyfriend for me. And she's only asking because she knows that Fabiola doesn't know as much about the system and how to navigate
Definitely
it.
Definitely was taking advantage
of her. So she's like clearly taking advantage of her.
So my first reaction when she started talking was, nope, 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 yep, suspicious, mm-mm. No.
Never talk to the police without a lawyer.
And and as soon as she started saying, like, we're just trying to get Dre, that's all, no, I was like, she's lying, she's full of shit. If I'd been sitting there next to Fabiola, I'd have been that loud person in the movie, she's don't go in there. Like, that would have been me.
This immediately pulled me out of the book, because, like, for several, like, I have the inside knowledge, so, like, I was like, one, Grosse Pointe Park wouldn't have a black cop.
Two. Was the detective black? That's what I thought.
Yeah, she was brown.
She said brown. Ambiguous brown.
Cool. Yeah, ambiguous brown. But like they have only white men. I'm pretty sure. Like the only female cop I ever saw growing up was when I was little, and when I was walking my Great Dane when I was 7, and she's like, "Are you walking that dog, or is that dog walking you?" And I was,
well, maybe by now they have two.
Yeah, who knows? But like in Grosse Pointe Park, which I'm not from that specific city of the points, but like I think they only
there's
have
multiple parts of Grosse Pointe.
There's 5 points.
Oh Jesus, yeah. Christ.
I know, okay. It's a mess.
Also, okay. Context for people not from Michigan: Grosse Pointe is like the richest suburb of Detroit.
Not anymore. It's just the old money suburb.
The old
See,
old
I didn't
money
even have
suburb.
This context. I know more about Detroit. I knew nothing about Grosse
Pointe. But like, so when all the rich people left Detroit, they went to Grosse Pointe.
Ish. Yeah.
Okay. So
and like Dearborn.
It's where all the white flight people are.
Yeah. Yep.
Wonderful.
Well, no, it's all where all the like Indian Village white flight people are that left.
I don't know what that means.
But then it's one of the rich places they went in the book. But essentially, like now there's like newer money, quote unquote, that's like further away from Detroit. Because the thing is, like my family home growing up in Grosse Pointe is actually 5 blocks from Detroit, quote unquote. So like you go 5 streets to the west and you're in Detroit. You go 5 streets to the east and you're in the lake. So it's like this weird little like microcosm bubble. But that was my whole thing. It's the first point. I was just like, there wouldn't, like, it's a very, for all my, like all that I try to defend it, it's not a great place. It has some, like, there's some great people that come from it, but it's, like, you can usually tell what a person is like by when they say where they're from. Usually if people ask me, I say, I'm from the Detroit area. Because you don't go, I'm from Grosse Pointe. Because those people are the ones who win the most likely to stay in Grosse Pointe award for the
if
yearbook.
If you do it just like that, I'll know to avoid you. I'll cross like, the street. I'm from Grosse Pointe. Okay.
Like, you know,
I gotta
those,
go. Like, I gotta those, be elsewhere.
They're a special, like, set of people who, like to pretend that they're like an East Coast Martha's Vineyard live in the Hamptons kind of person. I'm like, no, you're just a Grosse Pointe. Like, not even. It's
middle of nowhere, Michigan.
But then the other thing about Grosse Pointe is I also didn't believe that they'd be going this far for the drug bust for many reasons. Yeah. One of them was that, like, sure, it'd be like sad if a girl died, but that happened recently and people were like, it's her fault for doing that. And they kind of have that like sense of like, this actually happened. Like this, a girl was in a, happened to be in a bad area and she got hit by a drug dealer's bullet and she was a little white blonde girl.
The outrage was a little unclear in the book. I was almost like, who's mad and why? She was just a white girl who died and everyone's, I mean, I get it because she was a teenager and young, but they didn't, they basically just said they're outraged and that was, it was just supposed to be a backdrop to set up the situation. Like, you
I
don't
think
find
there's also
about
supposed to be this undertone of like the white community is outraged and is like leveraging resources to try and like find whoever sold this person
so that
the drugs.
But that's the other thing. It wouldn't be true because
I don't.
Grosse Pointe adults also love a lot of drugs. Like they're
surprise, people like drugs.
Like they're doing coke on the golf course at the country club. Like they're like, oh my. So I actually had several girls in my graduating class have to leave school to go to Switzerland for rehab. Like there are like, I'm a pretty like average.
Your high school was a different kind of high school than like, I've ever been
it's,
to.
It's half Lord. Middle class kids and half really fucking rich kids who like don't like. Got drunk, crashed her car on the country club golf course, got a brand new car. Like, that kind of people. Yeah. I went to school with those people, and I went to school with normal people. But it's just like, so when I found them, like, I was like, Grosse Pointe wouldn't be trying to nail this drug dealer. They use them too much. It's
like, they'd be like, oh, there's a drug dealer? Great. Has anyone got his number? Or, like, can I call him?
Like, it's literally, I think the actual reaction would be more of, wow, they were dumb to, like, not go through the proper channels to get this shit. Like, that's really what it would be.
I understand it, though. I think a friend just told me a story about he was walking past a dispensary on Hash Bash, but this was in Ipsy. And two teenagers are like, we hear there's weed around. Do you know where the weed is? And he was like, you can't just, first of all, you're in the wrong city. And second of all, you can't just stumble around the street going, do you know where all the weed is? So, yes.
Yes.
Teenagers do make dumb mistakes and just like, yes. especially when they're in mm-hmm. that phase where they're just like, I hear there's drugs. Does anyone know where the drugs are?
Yeah. yeah. Well, and I think the thing that she was trying to like highlight was that disparity between like when like white kids go missing versus when like African American kids go missing, and we have like national
hashtag
searches.
Find our girls.
Yeah, exactly. We have like national searches for like the little white kids, but not for the little black kids, mm-hmm. which is
even at
problematic.
Even but at the like, end of the book, the with Dre and Kasim.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Kasim died in a white area by a white man's hand. Dre died in a like black area by. We, like, they assume, yeah. they didn't know. It's
by actually, a magical half-trans godman with a cane and but, not even a weapon.
Yeah, and because of, like, this disparity, Kasim is, like, you know, become a movement, yeah. they say, and then Dre's just in obscurity forever, his yeah. eye patch blowing away in the wind down yeah. the street.
So, I mean, like, there are like, those
deep
disparities.
Imagery. I really, imagining the eye patch blowing away, and next to it just, like, a tumbling tumbleweave, because in Detroit there's always like, weave blowing around on the streets.
Oh, you mean...
I didn't hear you say weave. Oh, yeah. It's in predominantly black communities, especially where there are hairdressers, you will find it. Yeah. It'll either be natural hair or weave just blowing down the street.
I also love that thing where she was going to cut her weave out and Donna was like, no, that is real human hair.
That
Get
was,
over here.
Oh, I forgot how excited I got when they talked about black yeah. hair. Even oh, And yeah. I have never been a person who's worn weave, but my sister does. And I think my cousin Ashley has before. Mm-hmm. So they know things about it. So it was fascinating for me just as a person who's been near it, but never. I'm like, oh, okay. They talk about how they cornrow her hair. They talk about how mm-hmm. they sew it in. And then they yeah. talk about the real life stuff. Like, it's kind of looking kind of nappy now. Like, it's been 3 days and I slept, or like a week and I slept on mm-hmm. it. It's looking kind of bad. So there was a bit where Kasim came over and she was like, oh, my weave's starting to look like a nest because it's all kind of matted together. So she tries to like figure out how to fix it. Mm-hmm. So it was just nice to have not only like they kind of just talk about it. And it was just nice to learn about, how it works. And then just kind of to talk about the reality where it's like, it's not perfect forever now. Mm-hmm. It's real hair. You mm-hmm. have to take care of it.
Well, it's like when you read about periods in books and you're like, oh, they're talking about it.
Yeah, you're like,
oh, the thing.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that doesn't come up much, but I'm always pleased when I see it. I don't know why, but anytime anyone talks about black hair, I'm like, great, please tell me more. I know nothing. Just tell me more. Because just trying to figure out my own hair was so hard mm-hmm. because of the lack of, like, actual, I mean, I learned from my family. I learned from my mom, I learned from my family. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I'm just like, why isn't it mentioned in everyday life so that I can know mm-hmm. what's normal and what's not normal? So it was nice to see their everyday life and have things like that included, mm-hmm. the non-glamorous things. Yeah. And especially talking about how Donna was pretty, but how it was all just like, and they talked about the different components to it. You know, her nails, her hair, her clothes, her purse.
The makeup. Oh, yeah.
The makeup.
I worked with a Donna. She was my favorite person.
Was her name actually Donna?
No.
That's a bummer.
I know. But I worked with a Donna type person. That's one of the things she would do. She'd point out to me because she knew I knew absolutely nothing, given mm-hmm. I am this Gross Point white girl.
I believe in you. I believe you know things.
I try so hard. But she would like point out to me, she's like, oh, she should not have that weave. Oh, she does not have the right type of hair. You should have like, apparently there's different types of weave that you should match to different hair types and all these things. And I didn't know that, but she'd just like point that out and I'd be like, oh, she also called me a bad bitch once. And I was like, is that a good or a bad thing?
Only because you said there are different kinds of weeds. Weaves. Can I sidebar to a story my sister told me once about it? She was at work. A white guy came in. She works basically behind a desk. So she was helping him with whatever she was helping him with. And in the middle of her helping him, he pauses and goes, is that 1A? And she was like, What?
Oh my God, yes.
And he's like, is that 1A? And he's like, your hair. I had this girlfriend who used to wear weave. I had a black girlfriend and she used to wear weave all the time. So he proceeds to tell her all about his black girlfriend, how she used to wear ex-girlfriend, and how she used to wear lots of weaves, and she used to wear the same kind. So he's like, oh, you're wearing 1A. That's the one I went and got from the store for her.
Wait,
oh, can I just, 1A is the type of weave she was wearing. Can I just, before I even fit, nobody ever do that. It doesn't matter how well-meaning you are. It doesn't matter if you know what kind of weave it is. Don't go up and guess people's weave.
You mean?
Because my sister was like, you're right. This is awkward and terrible.
You mean a white man shouldn't mansplain to a black woman about weaves?
He wasn't even mansplaining. He just kind of wanted like props for figuring it out. He just was really proud of himself. And he wanted her to be like, kudos, you did it.
Look what I did.
You did it. Racism is over. You've done it.
Well done.
But it's just the story you hear, and the end of it is pretty much like that. Just awkward dispersal, because my sister was like, I have nothing for you to respond. Like, yes, you've guessed the correct weave. Thank you for point. Okay, go away.
Oh, no.
So, yes, you're right. There are different kinds of weave, but even if you know that, don't ever. Don't ever talk about it.
Yes.
Sorry, we talked about weave for a long time, but that's
gotta
how my ramps
into
happen.
American Street.
Okay.
American and Joy Street. So one of the things that I think the book did really well is, like, through Fabiola's eyes, you can kind of see, as she puts all the, like, relationships together in the book, that there are kind of, like, these actions that have happened in the past. So, like, we talked a little bit about it with, like, Dre killing Donna and Pri's father, where, like, the consequences carry forward, and it makes it harder for people to, like, escape this kind of, like, the, like, basically their circumstances of, like, being in this place that's, like, and, like, the culture of drugs and all that stuff. It's just, like, very hard to get out of. So, like, as the book was going forward and Kasim and Fabiola are dating, it got to the point where I was like, this is never going to end well, because, like, Kasim is Dre's little, like, like, friend who, like, clearly sometimes helps him sell drugs, but not all the time, and he's trying to be better than that.
And
but
in the end, right before he dies, he dreams of going to other places. Or yeah. In his story, they talk about, because as Kathy said, they have stories for everyone. Oh, Kathy's making your sad puppy face. Don't, you're going to make me cry. So, but he has it, even at the end of his story, he's talking about how he and Fabiola might, like, move somewhere and get a nice house. And he's and like, I'd like buy a house for her.
Yeah, he's like, I would get a government job for her.
Yeah, and there's like, that little bit of, like, escaping at the end where they're like, we could escape from all this, like, terrible life and go have a nice one somewhere else.
That is what broke me.
Yeah.
I was just like when they were actually
died right after that. It was really hard.
It was when they were hooking up, and I had already been spoiled knowing that he had died via our group text message.
Yeah,
and you guys
ruined it for everybody.
Well, I mean, it was right to assume I had finished it at that point. But I texted Audrey because I was like, girl, no. Girl, don't do it. He's going to die. He's going to die.
Everybody just stop reading at page 198 and just go eat some ice cream.
I was like, don't fall in love with him. Don't do it.
This is like where you turn off the TV at the end of Old Yeller and you're like, and then everyone lives happily ever after, go to bed.
It was fine.
It was the
end. He got that government job.
That's right. He went to the party and then he decided, you know, I think I won't sell drugs. I
and
think
Dre
I'll move
is the
away.
Worst. I should stop being his friend.
Dre's the worst. I should. Oh, but they again, they go but through his story. I think I really like that they went through everyone's story because I was prepared to hate almost everybody in this book. Like, not hate, but they're not. They intentionally don't make them great people because they're like, they're perfectly normal people who happen to be in a situation that's crappy, and they've all handled it differently. So, like, you see how Chantal handles it with all her books and studying, and she's escaping, going to college. She's going to get away.
Well, no. She could have gone to a legit college, but instead she had to stay and take care of her family, so she's at the community college.
And right, because so Mott and Joe is ambiguously sick. We forgot to mention that, and I don't really... We don't know what she had. Oh, right, she had a stroke, but we don't know what currently is ailing her. She's just taking lots of just general stroke pain. Yeah.
But, like, so the other thing, I think we've danced around a little bit, but, like, Chantal, Pri, and Donna are essentially running, like, a drug business. Like, they're selling drugs to kids at parties.
Because, is it because of Mott and Joe, or is it in...
Because of Chantal. She had a connection to Grosse Pointe through, like, at school.
Well,
which
no,
is the school where they do a bunch of drugs.
But that's not why they're doing it. They're doing it to support their mom because their money is running out.
And what was Mott and Joe? Yeah. Mott and Joe was into something. What was it that
she
did?
She is a moneylender.
Okay,
she was
a loan shark. That's why. That's right.
Yep.
And when I first started, I thought they were all in on it. I thought Mott and Joe was like the drug queenpin, and that she was like, not obviously in charge of everything, but I thought she was in charge and she was the one who was telling the girls to go. Like, they were her little soldiers and they went out and sold.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they were selling drugs and she didn't know about it, and they were just doing it to make more money because her money from loan sharking was running out.
There was something where it, like, wasn't doing as well or something, and so there was, like, less money. Like, Chantel talks about, like, their mom's money, like, ending at a certain point.
And again, with the, like, ominous foreshadowing of death, because I feel like Uncle Q was around a lot, kind
he
of
was, like,
hovering
in the
about. He was hovering in the back. There was a lot of people hovering in the background just to create, who were there designed to create tension. Like, Uncle Q was, like, the driving force behind a lot of people did, and, like, the funding.
Yeah, because he was the one that set up Mom and Joe with her business after their dad died. But then he also is the one supplying drugs to the three cousins.
He's also the one that had their dad die.
Yeah, also the one that caused
their
father
10-year-old shoot this man Detroit Tigers hat. I just felt like whenever they said Detroit Tigers hat, instead of just like in a Detroit hat, because that's pretty much what it is. You don't go in a Detroit Tigers hat
with the tiger D on it. The D for Detroit Tigers. Is that right?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, thank God.
But it's also like,
I know nothing about sports. I've just seen this hat a lot.
Yeah,
I think so. That D is everywhere, basically. So it's not specific to Tigers. I get that.
Yeah, I think it's
Detroit baseball cats.
I love the Detroit baseball cats. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah. Oh my there's God. This amazing play. I feel like we should describe there's an amazing like icon spoof of the Detroit Tigers logo.
You should just Google it, actually. It's the Detroit Baseball Cats, and you'll find it. You don't have to spell it any fan. Just Detroit Baseball Cats. It is my favorite thing.
It's a beautiful derpy tiger, and everything's spelled wrong, and that's what makes me so happy. Detroit Baseball Cats. So if you're not from Detroit, it might not be that funny, but I think most local people will enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I've seen people with T-shirts, and now I really want one with that derpy tiger on it.
But I don't know where to
sorry, I just completely derailed everything with the Detroit Baseball Cats.
I eventually have a thing I want to chat about, but I feel like I'm a
let's
little
move
bit
on to that
manipulating the conversation here. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're done.
You knew. You've
whatever,
met me.
So.
I just never stop talking. But I wanted to talk about just voodoo, and that was your point. But reminded me of my mother. When I was in Jamaica over the summer, my mother talked a lot about things like this, but I don't think that she talked about it like a religion. There they call it, what the hell do they call it? Obia? Obia? And so that's like their type of voodoo.
I like that she looks at us like we would know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah,
that stuff.
I always do that. But yeah, it's called Obia. And it's as they were describing all the voodoo stuff and how they were describing like her altar and how it was set up and how they were describing all her different gods, I kept coming back to that because it vaguely, my mother did not have nearly as like detailed stories as Fabiola has, so the information I have is only that it was called Obia and that's voodoo, and once there was a guy named Fitzy who lived on a hill and he was an Obia guy. End
Aww,
of story.
Sure.
Yeah. But what, as I was reading all the different bits about how she practices her religion and all the spirits and like she makes an altar and she uses different materials like candles and a growing plant, and as she was like talking about it, it kind of weirdly filled in, it's, I'm sure I'm like making a mishmash of it because the cultures aren't the same, but it, for me, it sort of filled in some of the empty details that my mother hasn't given me or doesn't know about Obia and just the idea of how like spiritual things can combine with magic in a lot of cultures. Because for my mom, Obia was a bad thing. Voodoo isn't something that you like messed with there. You went to see Fitzy if like some bitch stole your man and you wanted to like sell a piece of your soul to turn her hair green or make frogs come out of her mouth or something. It was always like you go to Fitzy if you have to.
I definitely
it's bad shady business.
Yeah. When you first started off saying like you see him when you have to, I'm like, oh God, is she gonna mention like cancer or maybe someone's dying?
No.
And then you're like, when
someone stole
your man.
Petty vengeance bullshit. Definitely. Because that's the example my mom gave me and they all gave me. They were talking about like, I knew a friend, she went, or like they all know a story about a friend who went to go see Fitzy because some lady did something bad. So
we don't like that.
The speaking of the voodoo always reminded me of that, and it gave me actual context, but it helped me to think about it, and it's interesting to see how different cultures interpret similar ideas and but can be completely different directions with them.
Well, and I think Fabiola had more of like an inside track to it too, because she talks about how her mom is like a priestess for it.
I forgot.
It could be that it's like she's not like a typical practitioner. She's also like the daughter of someone who's like your Fitzy equivalent.
So she might know more about it than even like the general public of Haiti might. Like people who practice the same religion but maybe don't have a priestess for a mother, so don't know how to make an altar or whatever.
Yeah. Although it was interesting because the altar was similar to like, if you think about it, the idea of like offerings and stuff is similar to like a lot of different cultures, which I found really interesting because I know like lots of cultures have like you leave offerings at the altars and stuff. I don't know.
There was definitely a lot of that. A lot of what she had at her altar was offerings for the different gods that she was seeing personified in all the different people. So Bad Leg being Papa Legba, and then who was Izili Danto? That was the like goddess
beauty.
Of beauty and something about vengeance.
relationships.
Because she sees her in Donna.
She sees her in Donna because Dre's beating the crap out of her, and Donna is their relationship. We can discuss more later, but she basically is like, I will be that for you, and I will be, you know, the warrior for you.
Yeah.
And that's why, that's a big part of the reason why she works so hard to get Dre into the detective's arms, even though everyone is screaming, no, don't do it, because we can all see the trap.
Yeah.
But she was working so hard because she thought she was saving Donna.
Yeah, and there was a point where she's like, I'm just not going to deal with the detective anymore until Dre comes back and starts beating on Donna again.
Anyway, sorry, side note, but it reminded me that my mother had told me similar things, and it reminded me that a lot of cultures, you're right, use similar things, but everyone
similar
interprets
but
it
different.
Differently.
Yeah,
everyone interprets it differently.
Not to say that it's like it's all the same.
No.
Everyone,
I think
does
it's
this.
Pretty clear we're discussing that there are similarities and differences.
Yeah. It was just really, it was a really interesting element to the story because I feel like it also made the culture that she came, because she filtered it all through this like voodoo filter, that sounds really weird.
Yeah.
Like it made the culture she came from seem more like a real thing, because you could see her trying to like apply what she knew from Haiti mm-hmm. to America, and like as Americans you read it and you're like, oh,
it's like square oh, no. peg round hole, it yeah. just doesn't work,
and you're like, no, not quite. But then in other ways you could also see how it gave her like a different perspective that was really helpful, like mm-hmm. for Donna's relationship. She talks about like how half of it's beauty, but then like half of it's like if the person's mistreated, it can turn into this like vengeance thing. So there was like, it was interesting to see it applied.
You almost make it sound like religion can be useful for getting through your life if you don't go completely yeah. crazy and apply it to every
I
single little thing.
I have heard that from some
yeah.
people.
I think studies have shown that it's very beneficial.
Studies
actually.
Have shown that huh. all good things in moderation are good. Wow. No?
Math.
Meth
I don't know if you can moderate meth. I don't know if you can moderate. Sure, if you could moderate meth, maybe it'd be
wait,
fine.
But also pause. Is meth a good thing?
Oh, it has to be a good thing in moderation?
Yeah, yes. All good things in moderation. The good is very important here. I mean, hopefully all bad things in moderation or non-existent, but all good things in moderation is the phrase, I believe.
Okay.
My family says everything in moderation, including moderation.
Oh, God.
Which oh, says so a lot about my family.
The
meta
logic behind that has now exploded my brain. Just all logic including okay sure yeah, right. Darn it, as usual I had a thing but I
it's
forgot
gone.
It
well I'm just gonna add really quickly that Fabiola Toussaint is the most beautiful name I've ever heard,
and
which
I
oh,
definitely
that's how you
can't.
Say it so all the French based I words I was like nope moving forward
yeah. I kept saying I think I said it right because I just went to France and I mispronounced a lot of things there and I was corrected a lot so there was a lot of that. It was definitely a lot of aww. Like oh you cute adorable aww, American yeah. no you just said goodbye to me.
I oh boy. Have a bit hard time with even English words that have French roots, so like every time there was a French name I was
I
just
figured
like
Toussaint?
Mm-hmm.
Toussaint?
Sure
Toussaint?
Yeah, something like that yeah.
sure. Let's just be real. We're all going to pronounce it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
but that's fine.
There's probably a French person just
I got
like,
princess, right?
They hear it.
I pronounce prima donna perfectly.
Yeah. It's, we're good. We're good to go. But yeah, it's just reminded me that
I also remember
I'm never going to be able to use that name because of cultural appropriation. So it's going to go with Sotsky off to my side in my little box of names that I love
Sotsky?
And can never use.
Sotsky?
I really like from? Spirited Away, okay, you guys?
So that's from.
Oh, wait, no, it wasn't Spirited Away. It was no, My Neighbor
yeah,
Totoro.
Yeah, yeah, there we go.
That one.
Okay. Like, I thought you were referring to like a Polish last name, so no. I was very confused.
Sotsky? See, because I'm super Polish, that would be a great
well,
assumption.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's how your last name is. But yes. I remembered my thing, and it was because we were comparing American culture and Haitian culture, and there was a really good scene where they make that really obvious how Fabiola's like doing her best and applying all the information she has. She's working with what she knows to make them Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, yeah.
She makes them all Thanksgiving dinner. So it's funny to see her. Basically, some big thing happens. I can't remember what. But
she
no
was
one,
a precious angel in this scene.
Everyone is indisposed and nobody can like
well, also
help
no one
make.
In their house really cooks.
Yeah. Except Mott and Joe cooks. Yeah. But she like usually, you know, does.
She's
say,
vaguely
I won't
sick.
Say. You know, my mom will never hear this podcast. She kind of usually like sounds like she dries out the turkey. Like she's like, just like my mom. And you know, she does her best to make an American meal, but my mom's not great at it either. She's like, okay, so how do you cook a freaking dry turkey? Can I make
what
it
do you
into
do with
like
this bird?
Can I add jerk sauce? What the hell is this?
Oh my god!
And
that
so
would be
that's
so
kind
good.
Of what Fabiola does. She's left alone with all the ingredients. They bought all the stuff, so she looks at it and goes, oh yes, okay, I can do this. And she makes like a turkey stew, and mm-hmm. she makes all these traditional Haitian dishes, which sound amazing.
Yeah, it sounded
and
awesome.
And the first thing they do, there's definitely a lot of them trying to squish. They prefer American culture very clearly, and they don't really care much about her Haitian culture mm-mm. except for Chantal, because Chantal was born there. So the first thing Princess does is be like, what the fuck did you do to our turkey? It's like in soup, and it's gross, and it's supposed to be a full turkey, and you're supposed to put stuffing in it. So she explains it, and I actually love Fabio's reaction where she's like, ew. That sounds terrible. Why would you not want to eat this delicious meal I just prepared yeah. for you just because yeah. I cut up the turkey? And in the end, they all sit down and eat the meal, which I was very pleased about.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of that. A lot of the American culture kind of stomping out her culture. And she's confused by it, too, because mm-hmm. over the phone, it sounds like all her cousins were pretty accepting of it. Her aunt used to let her talk in Haitian.
Creole.
Yeah, that's Creole. What it is. And Creole to her, speak in her own language, and then she gets there, and Mott and Joe's like, you call me Aunt Joe or Auntie Joe. Can't remember what she had her
well, her kids were horribly bullied, so.
Yeah, Yeah, and yeah. So that's why. But she's basically like doesn't let. But even in their house, you know,
yeah,
she doesn't
even
let.
In their house,
she really doesn't let Fabiola,
weird.
And it's immediate. She says, "You get here," and as soon as she starts to, every time she says it, she corrects her. So mm-hmm. It really seems aggressive. And Fabiola mentions it where she goes, "They didn't seem to hate it till I got here, and now everyone seems to think my culture's, you know, not good enough." But that's all she's got to work on. That's all yeah. she has. And you know, her mother might have been there to help, but now she's been detained. So a lot yeah. of the struggle of the story is that just her trying to. Figure biz out.
Yeah, it's definitely the like I'm trying to be in a new culture and I thought my mom was gonna be here but she's not and now we're all yeah. this is terrible.
What do
it makes you understand yep. how much more confusing it might be to be a immigrant who is a teenager who mm-hmm. has to figure out teenage culture too.
Yeah,
because as they were describing it I was like, this seems foreign to even me. I don't know what half of this is or like how the behavior is. It almost seemed like Fabiola was prepared for a lot of it because mm-hmm. of where she came from. So there were some really great scenes, and they remind you that occasionally. There were great scenes where there someone is either being aggressive or, like, trying to hit on her. Someone,
the,
yeah. No, it was the fight. It was the fist fight.
That I was actually yeah. going to bring up on page, like, 112, 113. They have a whose life is worse off between her and Chantal, which is something actually that my boyfriend, being from South Africa, brings up. He's like, apples and oranges. Both people have it bad, yeah, but I'm just saying the
problem.
Black community in America has it way better off than the Black community in South Africa. And I just go, I can't speak to that.
I remember the only other movie when I was a kid that I saw about race was The Color of Friendship on Disney. And it was about a girl who had moved from South Africa mm-hmm. to America. And she was like an immigrant student, but the host family was Black and she was white. And they were really confused because they were like, you're from South Africa. I thought you'd be Black. And they like. They just thought that's
written
like,
on his whiteboard in his office.
And the yes, and the entire and like her family, I think that is deals with a lot of racism. Like her the exchange student's family is a little like they have mm-hmm. more. So I think I had an idea of that from a Disney movie I saw 10 years ago. That's where I get all my relevant topical cultural information.
But Fabiola is actually like she's a legit person. She's mm-hmm. a grown up. But I think part mm-hmm. of the reason that we kind of. I saw her as a little bit more childlike is because she's separated from her mom. She's focused mm-hmm. really on the separation from her mom, and you only get glimpses of her past life. So this is like kind of like she's entering into a new world, like a baby being born mm-hmm. for the first
being
time.
Being birthed into America, yeah. onto American Street.
Except she's just a super legit baby.
Yeah.
Who can hold her own in a fight.
That's the thing. She's really smart and she knows like adult things, but mm-hmm. because she's in this new culture and because sometimes
always,
she does things that I'm like, this is just blatantly like, even you should know better than this. Don't get in that car.
Yeah.
But yes.
I think there's a combination of like, it's the culture being something she's unfamiliar with that gives her this like air of like, I'm going to say this word wrong, but naivete?
Naivete. I know what you mean. I knew exactly what you're going for.
Yeah.
I was like, it starts with an N, it's weird to say. Naivete.
Yep. sometimes can be mispronounced for that Christmas word, you know.
Nativity. I know that one too.
Nativity.
I'm very pleased with how many words I've gotten right.
That like kind of makes her seem more childlike, but yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. There are moments, also the way that she like takes control of her, like, she's the only one who's, like, really focused on getting her mom back. And, like, the choices she makes to try and do that are questionable.
Yeah.
But, because like,
she doesn't know the system.
But
so
she doesn't
she's
know the
just,
system. So
like,
she's
imagine
trying,
her sort of in the dark just feeling her way
yeah,
around
exactly.
being like, I hope I hit something good.
Yeah. She's, like, trying to get her mom back with the tools that she has. And, unfortunately, they're just not great tools.
And the
yeah.
tools she has are useless and are literally designed to not help her. They're all numbers you can call so people can put you off and tell you your mom's still in
well,
good
care. The weird thing to me, too, is how unhelpful her cousins and her aunt were. Like, the cousins were just like, mom's handling it. And then her mom was like, I've done everything I can already.
Immediately.
And it was
like, this was
what?
Like page 20. Like, she gave up in the beginning. So the only one worrying about it is Fabiola. But that mm-hmm. actually, I mean, I had a theory because of that. Because mm-hmm. she wouldn't help, I had a theory. And because they told the story of Mott and Joe and Maman, Fabiola's mother, and like their story and how it was difficult and what they did, I thought that actually they would find out that when Mama, Fabiola's mother, was in America before, they both were like, doing drug-related things, and that's why. I thought that's why she'd gotten detained in the end, and, like, they were all just not telling anyone about it. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the reason she wouldn't help is because she knew that's why she got detained. I thought that she was mm-hmm. like, nothing I can do. You know, they know what we did.
I didn't see that at all.
I know that that's not what – because in the end, they actually explain what happened, but that was my theory for a long time building up to it.
Yeah, I just think that they're, like, they've been trying to survive. And, like, going back to what Audrey said about cycles of, like, sadness and violence and stuff, they're just trying to survive in the west side of Detroit. And sadly, my only experience really with the west side of Detroit is the jury duty I served on a first-degree homicide case. But it's a lot to get out of it. And, like, they kind of knew going into this, like, she'd already overstayed one visa. They might not let her in. And they didn't seem, like, they even said, like, oh, we thought something like this might happen. Mm-hmm. So it kind of seemed like maybe the mom even knew that coming into it, and that she was kind of like, you just go and you do you. Because this was all for her daughter and not for her. So.
Yeah. You're right, yeah. Audrey, the theme of escaping is definitely in there. When they tell their story, it's them escaping from Haiti. Because yeah. I remember they were on like a, was it Fabio and her mother who were on a boat, or was it Mancho and Maman who were on
them.
The boat?
Yeah.
So they tell their story, and I think that I was really pleased to hear it, because it is, it's just a really sad, really stressful story, the way that a lot of people end up having to come to this country in a way where they were like, we're on a teeny boat, and the boat starts sinking, and we all have to swim. It was just really stressful.
Yeah, they were like, bail out the boat.
So they're escaping from their country.
People jump out of the boat so the rest of us can get there.
Yeah, that was, and someone like announced that on the boat, was like, all right, you guys got to jump out so the rest of us can, who's going to jump out of the boat?
Yeah, who's going to be like, I'll do it.
I volunteer as tribute, and then just like, boop, into the water.
But see you guys later
in
the next life.
So they escape from their country into onto like a sad raft, and then they escape from the raft into the country, and then I, like, the rest of the book is all about like Fabiola trying to get her mother out of this prison that she's stuck in, and the end, the beautiful ending where they drive away and escape American Street and Joy Road.
Well, right? they escape Michigan, and we don't even know where they go.
Yeah, I kind of liked that. It was just sort of like driving off into the sunset. They wave goodbye to Papa Legba. Yeah. We disappeared into smoke.
Yep.
So it got very magical realism at the end.
Oh, yeah, I was like, you didn't know how to write yourself out of
this. Yeah, it was one of those ones where like Papa Legba's vaguely magical throughout the whole book, and then at the end, he's the one who kills Dre. He magically manifests like a gun cane and shoots him, and then disappears in a puff of smoke. So you're like, oh, so he's like legit made up fairy tale.
Well, that's the
business.
Well, that's also the thing, and this can kind of go into Kathy's smut corner with Nicole.
I may have run over someone else's topic. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
I talk
good?
Endlessly.
Yeah, but it's kind of just like, yes, you can either read it, like, that's the beautiful thing about magical realism, is you can read it two ways. You can read it
until the end where he like materializes with his gun.
Where
key.
No, that's literally magic.
That's the thing though. He didn't materialize with his gun. Like, yes, maybe he did materialize with his gun cane, but
we
also
don't see him actually enter.
That's the thing. He's behind her.
But
she's
he did
going
disappear.
To, that okay, think yeah. Put yourself in the situation.
How would he get in the house?
You just found out.
I think the door was
the
open
door was
they
open.
Were having because Jerry
to get in the
in.
House and get behind her and
no,
no,
no, no
one was like, what
I thought
the
he was
fuck
just in the doorway.
Okay. Let me set the scene. You just found out that your boyfriend, your current love of your life, has been murdered by the police due to your actions. His friend and like the guy you were trying to get killed is holding a gun to your face, and you say you accept death. And this time, I can make it like, and everyone's screaming and yelling.
Oh,
I can understand
I
someone coming in behind you not realizing it. And also, he's a random transient guy who has apparently served in different wars and stuff. He probably has a gun. We don't know.
His appearance in the house never was a thing where I was like, what's he doing here? But like, they made it pretty clear.
And he
like,
didn't
he
enter the house
the
either.
Cane.
He was in the doorway.
Yeah, he was holding the cane. The cane had turned into a gun. They made it pretty clear that the cane was not a gun. It was just, it shot him somehow.
I think she was just
bullet.
In the wrong, like in a
it's
weird
it's possible. It's possible that also it was like a little bit of hallucinating. It's just they make it really unclear at the end that it could be. They make that not seem like an option because he shoots the gun with the cane and then
he
turns into smoke and blows away.
Yeah.
That's magic.
I mean,
she could be going crazy. I think it's
can
a
we
theory.
Also, she's had her hair ripped out and has been kicked in the head multiple times with the fact that she's like
that
bleeding out of her face. So like, she's not all there right now.
Nah.
So like,
I think people who've been kicked in the face are probably fine.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, you're right. Good. The face kicking may have caused some hallucinations. It's possible that like in the, that there was hallucination because are there other points where things seem magical to her? That are normal to
everyone
else.
I mean, it's mostly Papa Legba and the other guy.
It's mostly Papa Legba. Like, sometimes he kind of disappears, but it's in the way where, like, she turned around and when she turns back, he's gone.
Yeah.
You know, too fast to have been.
Ha ha, he's a cat.
So with that, it was always magical realism, but I always felt like when he blew away, it wasn't. Still, I didn't think about the fact that she had just been concussed pretty seriously by feet.
Because
Dre beats the crap out of her, right?
Yeah.
He really beats her up.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he kicks her in the face.
He kicks her in the head and the face. He pulls her down the stairs.
They kind of montage over it, but yeah, he grabs her by the hair and drags her around and kicks the crap out of her. So she definitely got beaten up.
See, I was thinking about it as more as like body kicking.
Well, no, they literally said, like, don't kick her in the head if you want her to answer you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it gets a little hectic there at the end.
He's the worst.
With my, mm-hmm. yeah, but going off of that, with the whole magical realism thing, I'm kind of looking at that from the smut point of view of the relationship. Kasim and Fabiola, and how it's kind of like, they mention in the inside flap of the book that this is about the American dream and how it's like a dream. Like, so I kind of thought about how, what's a dream romance? They're going through all this. They fall in love so quickly and so instantly. And then I kind of was just like, wow, even in the American dream, even in a fairy tale, like a black man can't get ahead. That is like, and that.
And now he is dead.
And now he's really, and he's dead. And it's just, it made me really sad. So
I liked how realistic it was. Or is it realistic? It wasn't too, it was never going to be a book where everyone rode off into the sunset. Mm. Oh, yeah. But it was one where they were just kind of like, this is kind of what would happen in this American dream.
Did you guys think their relationship was it too quick? Because like she was only there for a couple months. And at first I was kind of like, this is too fast. But then I remembered when I started dating my current boyfriend and I was just like, this can't be real. This can't be real. And I like texted Audrey and I was like, what do I do? Like, how do I make sure this is real? And she goes, stab him and see if spiders come out.
That's definitely the normal way to date. That's how I do it. I go to every date with a knife and I say, sir, may I prick your finger? Just to check for normal red human blood.
Spiders did not come out and we were doing great. So okay. I guess like maybe it is just like the puppy love.
Congratulations
thing,
on your boyfriend too. Who isn't spiders. Yeah.
You know, like teenagers, the teenager element of like, I'm in love with this person is like definitely a
That's
happening.
Kind of why I wanted to compare their, although mm-hmm. if you have anything to say, Audrey, you should definitely go first because I would just talk for centuries.
No,
so that's why I wanted to compare their relationships, Kasim's and Fabiola's and Dre's and Donna's, because at first to me, they didn't seem that different. At first, I mean, Kasim always seemed like seemed like he could, what?
Dre has a red hat and Kasim has a blue hat.
So we know that he's good.
I'm clearly wrong. I'm the most wrong.
Don't forget the eye patch.
And the eye patch. They're just completely different. But they hung out together and, you know, the first thing you see is like Kasim doesn't come off as like, I don't know. I guess he's smooth talking.
Dre is such a dick that it just kind of like.
Dre is such a dick, you assume.
An aura of dickness.
And the fact that Kasim's still around him, you just assume he's got to have a certain level of dick in him to still hang out with Dre.
But when you first see him, only knowing him by this blue hat, it's him helping Papa Legba after
Dre you find out he's a pretty nice guy and you always suspect he is. Because, like, yeah, that's true. The first time you see him, Dre just beat the crap out of Papa Legba. He comes running out of the car and is like, let me help you up. But, there was a point to it, though. Because, I don't know, he came across as a little schmirmy. They first talk in a club, right?
Schmirmy.
Which is never... gonna Never be good, good. Which always just immediately put me on my guard and be like, Fabiola, just go away. Get away from him. But you can tell, like, maybe she's a person who enjoys clubs. She seems like a person who's okay with clubs, and I am a person who hates them, so maybe that's why. But he's kind of, like, smooth-talking her, and my first thought was, like, he seems shady. He seems shitty. What he's going to do is date you like Dre does, and then he's going
to
go.
I think you're supposed to think that, though, that's because of how terrible Dre is, and, like, I think it's that disarming of, like, Dre is terrible, sure, but, like, not everyone who is, like, in that situation is going to be awful. Like, it could be a Dre or it could be a Kasim.
That's another point. And maybe Dre would have ended up a dick anywhere and Kasim would have ended up a beautiful, wonderful, special sunflower unicorn any place he went. Mm-hmm. He would have been so happy and nice.
R.I.P.
But that's why at first I was resistant to the Kasim-Fabiola relationship. Yeah, because my first thought was like, no.
Yeah,
he's shady,
get
away.
Like, this dude is going to date rape you. Get the fuck out
of
there.
I was like, no. Don't drink anything he hands you. Don't get in his car. I had my mother scream. Oh,
I did not have this reaction.
If you'd grown up with my mother, I think that you would have, but only because she's made me sure someone's going to murder me.
The other thing, too, is I was like, Dre is like the worst one, but Kasim is like the slightly nicer, like not totally.
Next to Dre, he looks awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's part of the thing is because when we first see him as Blue Hat Man saving Papa Legba, I'm just like, I wonder if this character's going to show up again.
Okay, so here's the thing, though. He let his friend beat the shit out of Papa Legba and then was like, oh, don't worry.
Yeah, but we also know his friend has a gun and we also know that his friend.
Yeah, but he's not holding him hostage.
Yeah.
But it's also, there's a definite power dynamic there. His friend is older than him. His friend has helped him out in many situations. He feels like he owes him.
Do we remember?
But you're still friends with him.
Event made him so. Because I remember there was an event in his story that. But either way, he and Dre are like buds for life.
Am I the only one that has shitty?
It's like loyalty.
Yeah. His dad died, and then Dre looked out for him.
Yeah.
Like,
yes. Dre looked out for him. And Uncle Q. Uncle Q looked out for them both, and like Dre was.
Yeah. Dre would like beat up someone who was teasing him or something.
So that's
the
main part. So that's why. This book was hard because at first I didn't like Kasim because he was just going along with it. But you start to realize that when it comes to the situation they're in, there's like a spectrum of crappiness.
Yeah.
And he can really only choose to be further to the nice side of the spectrum and still live in that world. Because there's even that part at the – there's like a basketball game. All the teens are a basketball game. They're sitting in the bleachers and Dre shows up to – Don, I love you. Please take me back. I'll never hit you again. Whatever. Which is nonsense. And some guys, like, this guy's big ass head is in the way. And Dre immediately wants to murder. He's like, who said that? Yeah. And he asks Kasim to get up and go find him. And Kasim is just about to do it. He's just going to, because that's his job.
In his defense, he couldn't see who said it because he has an eye patch on one side.
That is true. That's entirely the reason. He definitely was like, Kasim, I'm struggling to locate this
person. He's already at a disadvantage. He can't play basketball because he doesn't have the depth perception. Like, he's just an angry person.
I am differently abled. I need you to go find this man so I can kick his ass. But so you search. It's one of those things where you're like, I'm uncomfortable with it. And obviously Fabiola is too. You can see she's hesitant because she's like, you're still doing all this crap with him, but I love you. I'll say I love you because she's a teenager and I'm sure she believes it. You know, I love you. And they had this cute relationship and they would have been fine. Now I'm all like, R.I.P. Somebody else take over because I can't. It's so sad. But their relationship, I definitely fell in love with it afterwards because the way she writes it is really beautiful. And the way she writes, I'm going to say it was a sex scene.
Yeah,
it's really beautiful.
They were naked.
You can make it pretty clear. They're not explicit, but like they go into more about the emotions. Yeah, it's more about the emotions, which I thought was really cute. She like kind of talks about how she feels the whole time, and you can't make it clear through like the physical descriptions what's happened, but you can guess. And it's really nice. And by the end, and this was pretty close to the end, I was all the way in, and that is when they killed him. Yep. She does a good job of that.
That was the scene where I was like, girl, don't do it. Girl, he's gonna die. Don't do it. Don't do it.
As soon as she got in that car and was like, hey Dre, you should go to a party in Grosse Pointe. Sell some drugs. I was like, yeah, Dre's gonna show up there with his eye patch and be like, anybody want any drugs? Like, obviously he's gonna send someone, and we know who his lackey is. It's obviously gonna be Kasim.
And obviously the kids in Grosse Pointe don't have the drug dealers come straight to the party because that's at their parents' house. They go to the drug dealers in Detroit.
Yeah, it definitely seemed you have to suspend your disbelief a little bit in the book in order to get a lot of the plot lines to wrap up because it's predictable in that way because it's specifically supposed to be like you can see it coming. But just because it was predictable doesn't mean it was really told. It was a story well told.
Well, that's the whole thing about magical realism is it throws all these things at you, and then the most dramatic and most like thing that you think would be fake is actually the thing that's the most true and real. Mm-hmm. Like that's what they do in like Gabriel Garcia Marquez and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that's what she did here. Like the thing that you like wish would be fiction, that this poor young man who's the nice one gets shot down by the police who should be on the side of good, is actually the most realistic thing that happens in the entire book.
So I changed my answer. Read this book if you want to feel all the feels and then cry into a pint of ice cream.
I finished this book and then I was like, let me go on Facebook to look at some shit posts and get over this. And the very first thing was a Cincinnati Black Lives Matter post about a cop who had previously killed someone and is back on the force kicking someone in the head when he was handcuffed. And I was like, life is great. This is great. I'm not crying.
Actually, you know what I just saw was the Kendall Jenner Pepsi commercial. Have you seen the Kendall Jenner Pepsi commercial where she solves racism with a Pepsi?
Oh, yeah.
She basically goes out to what looks like a Black Lives Matter rally. She stops her beautiful photo shoot and goes, what's going on? And then she gets a Pepsi and she strolls out into it. Then she hands it to a cop and the cop drinks it and everyone cheers. Like they all cheer like they've said, we did it. We solved whatever problem we're out here solving. Mm-hmm. And then Kendall Jenner's just there hanging out. It was another great example of like, useless.
I saw something on the internet where like someone at a protest did try to give a police a Pepsi
that was the thing. As soon as she walked up to him slowly casually with a Pepsi, I was like, any black person would never have gotten away with that.
Yeah, it was like, I think the guy got arrested or something in real life. But
so this book at least makes you think about, it's good at making you think about the rough shit that's going on in the world without explicitly trying to like sell you something or tell you exactly what it wants you to think. It's like, here's a story from that sort of situation. Mm-hmm. And so you have some perspective and you know some, you know, pretend character people.
Again, I think the character of Kasim too is really important for the whole like, sometimes people are born into these crappy situations, and like Kasim is obviously like a good person, but he still does things that are like kind of morally ambiguous because like that's the situation.
It sounds like it's not that morally ambiguous in their, you know, immediate situation. To them, they're like, this is what you have to do
to like survive.
And maybe it's bad, but no one's ever told them, you know, it's really bad, so you shouldn't do it. It's like it's bad, but it's the bad thing that you have to do versus the bad thing that you don't have to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What you gonna do about it?
It's not a bummer story. It's not as bummer a story as it sounds.
Yeah, it's
really
well
written. But it's definitely
one
where you will feel feelings. And that's actually a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was a teenager, I couldn't handle that. All I wanted was smut and happiness all the time. And now I'm like, I understand the point of feeling bummed sometimes.
I mean, with the Cancer Kids story, teenagers today are more prepared for it. No,
I'm not doing it. There are a lot of death stories in teen literature. I'll try not to find any more, though, because I generally do not have the patience for it. Mm-hmm. But I think that this story wasn't, it had death as in the background. It wasn't entirely about it. And when Cassim is shot, it's part of it, but it's the end, at the very end. Uh-huh. And they don't talk about it too much because, like, you knew it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. The whole point is Fabiola's reaction to it after.
Mm-hmm. There's also something about, like, The Fault in Our Stars where, like, the cancer angle seems almost,
gratuitous.
Oh, gratuitous, okay. And kind of, like, taking... it just seemed like there's something about that setup where it seems like you're not taking advantage of, but just, like, it doesn't... Not that, you know, it just, like, there's something about it that, like, seems exploitive to me. Yeah. Whereas this book, because the death was at the end and it, like, wrapped up, like...
I mean, the death was at the end there, too.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But, like, I have never read the entire book. Point of this book was not...
I only read the last 20 pages when I worked at a Barnes & Noble.
And I've also never seen the movie and I never plan to.
Yeah, I've never read it. So it could be handled really well, but there's something about the whole setup where it's, like, they're going to die the whole time. That just seems...
Yeah. I think this book was very good at foreshadowing, and that's why it wasn't predictable, because it was intentionally building up to things, and it was a little unclear where it was like, it's clearly foreshadowing something bad, but you're not 100% sure what that bad thing will be.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And in this story, you're not surprised by it. Everything's bad, so you're not surprised that there are bad things that are going to happen. So it doesn't make it mega predictable.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to quickly throw in here, for people in the Detroit area, it's a super great read, mostly because it captures so many different things about Detroit. Like, as we said, there's places where I'm like, I've been there, I've done that.
What were the references where you were like, I understand that reference?
Bucharest Grill, definitely. Even going across from, like, the Detroit Opera House, I just went there to see Lion King, like, stuff like that. It's just, but the thing that actually hit me the most was how much time they spent in cars and how much time they spent in transit, because everything is so far apart.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like these dates she has with him, like, these are full day dates just from driving from one place to another, because it takes forever to get places. And, like, that's, like, even just thinking about, like, where Chantal went to school and where they live in western, like, on the west side of Detroit, like, that would be, especially with rush hour, like, a 35-40 minute commute for her. And I don't think they had a car at that time. I'm unsure, so it might have been by bus.
Someone,
which isn't relative.
Yeah,
but that was might have been after she left school.
Chantal had a car, so she would, like, come pick them up or whatever.
But was that, we don't know if that was when she was in high school still.
Yeah, I don't know about
and
that.
And I do like, they do include bus travel in this. They make it pretty realistic. And everyone's not just hopping into cars, and generally people who are just hopping into cars aren't great people.
Well, it's, like, a big deal that Dre has a nice car.
And that car, like, that white car is a main, there are very few settings in this book. It's like the house on American Street, school, and Dre's car, and seems to be, and like Q's club kind of, but she's only there a few times. Dre's car is a main, because she gets in, and like, it's always a big deal her getting into it. They always describe the setting. It always smells like weed, and it's always really dark, so you know it's like kind of a shady place to be. And it's definitely one of the only sets where I was like, don't go in there. Don't go in there. And she did go in there.
Yeah.
And look what happened. Look what she did.
Look what happened.
I can't scroll for some reason, so let me try this. Okay. Yeah. So does anyone have any last things to say before we, like the family, leave American Street?
I feel like I want to make sure well, you know, there was just the nice wrap-up ending. I still like the sweet wrap-up ending where they're like, you see Papa Legba, she waves goodbye to him, and he, like, I think he disappears again.
Yeah, he's like, see you later.
Peace. And like,
she finds the picture of when the family first moved to American Street, and the uncle's still alive, and he's like in the background of the picture somehow.
Yeah.
Like, bad the same and, age. Like,
and
yeah.
And that's right. That's another bit of where they make it pretty clear that he's been watching over either the family or the house since forever.
Like, the whole time.
It seems like a lot, the family a lot.
Well, the house too is interesting because they go into like the backstory of the house.
I was going to talk about during the death bit, but I forgot.
Yeah,
do it.
There's like a death curse on the house because I can't remember why.
Cycles of violence and sadness.
Cycles of violence and sadness. Basically, it starts with every single person gets a story, a brief story that they tell you. Here's their background, and the house even gets one. 8800 American Street, this important address where like this immigrant from like long yesteryear moved in, and he thought it would be a great life for him, but he died. And then this guy moved in, he died. And then they were like, and then one day a man named Haitian Phil moved in. And that's what everyone calls the dad, Haitian Phil. Named Haitian Phil moved in, and he thought a street on the corner of Joy Road and American Street is the perfect house. And holy shit, Kathy's found it on Google Maps.
Because American Joy.
Yeah, because American Joy. He's like, perfect, a house with American Joy. And the names of the street are very ironic. And I think that in the end, they end up leaving behind American Street and driving down Joy Road. Yep. And that's supposed to be symbolic too.
Oh my God, is that the bucket? Is that the bucket?
So we're on Google Maps and there's the bucket outside of the trash can lot. And it's funny because there's an empty lot.
She Google Maps this.
If she picked an address, I bet she researched the address.
I'm sure.
But so they tell the story of the house even as it's this own, it like stands silent watch to all these deaths and all these people move in with this hope of the American dream or of whatever dreams they have. And then they inevitably die. So the house has a weird aura of death, and they never explained why, except they just, a lot of people have died in this house, and Haitian Phil died, and then Dre died in the house, and then eventually they just moved away, and whoever moves into the house will die afterwards.
Totally.
Yep. Great.
Yep.
Super solid.
Yeah, so I don't know. I thought it was a good book for dealing with hard stuff without having to get too in detail. It was more like you could kind of use your brain and think
about
the situation.
Yeah. There was not a lot of like, this is how you should feel about these things.
Feel these feelings, and also white people are terrible. Rah. It wasn't that, thankfully. It was really, and luckily, that wasn't the focus. There was racial tension, but only the amount that you would expect in the everyday lives of these kids, you know?
Yeah.
It's just there. But it wasn't really making different like races out to be villains. I mean, and Kasim's death was mainly just like, this is just what happens. It wasn't even, it was almost dealt with in the way of like, we all know that how this would end. And so that's what they did. But most of the evil main characters are just the people in her little community.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. I liked this book. It was sad, but I loved it.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's American Street. I know.
Yeah. It was good.
He is very excited to announce our next.
Oh, really?
Our next
project.
Kiss Kiss Fall in Love. I'm going off the branch here, and we're gonna watch an entire anime series called Auron High School Host Club.
I have already watched all of this.
Yes.
Manga.
Yes.
I read like in high school, so I'll have to go back. But I watched the TV show. I will admit, real recently.
Oh my god! Yeah. So I had a different one in mind.
Oh yeah,
book
we're
in mind,
out
but
to a
I needed
format.
A palate cleanser after this one. So we are going full Auron Host Club. I think we can set up a marathon.
Yeah.
How are we gonna talk about it in one hour?
Oh my god! I don't know.
Or however much time
we have. So much.
We can't even talk about like.
I am a
Tamaki.
I am a Tamaki. So you know that's all good.
Oh gosh. Okay. So he's the crazy blonde one that loves her.
So we're just gonna. Yeah. I'm just gonna give you a quick background. It's a great anime. There's also a manga, as Nicole said. So you guys should totally watch it. It's on Netflix. If I'm gonna suggest that we listen to the English dub only because Edward Elric from Full Metal Alchemist is the voice.
They like stole the Full Metal Alchemist voice cast, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. He's in a
I have
lot
really strong
of
feelings
things.
About
he's also,
it.
He's also in Full Metal Alchemist.
It's
so.
Yeah.
He's
well,
on that's, in there.
Those are the two big things. That
yeah.
Dave's
and then.
Done, but.
Yeah. And then one of the. Other characters.
No, not Full Metal Alchemist. Full Metal Jacket?
No, Full Metal Alchemist.
No, it was Full Metal Alchemist, but he was also in Full Metal Jacket. What the
Isn't that about Vietnam?
No, it wasn't Full Metal Jacket. It started with Full Metal, but I can't remember the end.
Well,
but he was also in it.
Was it Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood?
No.
Because definitely the same voice.
No, it's not the same one. I'm going to Google it. Is it Full Metal? It's not Full Metal Jacket. Oh, darn it.
I can pull this up right now.
It's an anime about
name is like Vic
a guy from the military who's going to high school. And it's Full Metal something, but it's probably something ludicrous because it's an anime.
Vic,
yeah. Told you.
Wait.
Vic.
And where is
something.
It? Full Metal. Is it not Full Metal?
Yeah, it's just the Full Metal Alchemist series.
No, where is it?
Full Metal Panic.
There we go. Full Metal Panic. Okay.
Awesome.
He was in Full Metal Panic, and he was also very funny in that. He plays ridiculous, goofy side.
And there's also
guns.
Another character is also a voice actor in my... Who knows?
I don't like looking people up on Wikipedia. Then I see their faces. It stresses me out.
He's a voice actor for a reason. Let's just say that.
Oh. I was more just like, I can't associate. I don't like it with authors either. I generally try not to look at the author picture, and I used to resent it when they were big and on the back. I'd be pissed. I was like, I don't want to know what she looks like. Sorry. Brief rant about
that.
That was
very passionate.
I really didn't used to like that. I liked the name. I liked the words. I didn't like the pictures. It's why I used to hate movie adaptations, too.
Yeah.
I was pissed about Harry Potter until I
Everyone
became
was
all
pissed about
Harry
Potter.
But another one of the voice actors is also, he is a voice actor on another show called Ghost Stories, which is a wonderful English dub where the show went out of business in Japan and they're like, let's just do whatever you fuck you want in the English sub. And it is so great.
Is it just nonsense?
Oh, yeah. Like, it starts off where they still try to follow the plots, but by the end, they're just like, haven't we already done a Ring ripoff before? Just, like, things like, it's so great. So, like, I have So much love. I'm already deciding who all of us are.
So we're watching all of Ouran High House Club. It's just the one season, right? It's just the one long.
Yeah, the one season. Yeah. We can all do that at Audrey's house. It's going to be great.
That's not hard.
So excited. But yeah, thank you everyone for listening. And we actually have a different thing to add today.
So we're publishing our first episode on iTunes now, which has reminded us that we should probably be asking you guys to rate and review us, because that's how more people will find our beautiful, beautiful voices.
It'll also let us know.
We just want people to hear us talk and think we're cool.
We just want to spread love of YA literature to the world.
Just write in and tell us that we're pretty and then write out.
I mean, there's a reason that we're doing a podcast and not a TV show.
Yes, that's right.
There's a reason we're voice actors.
But
I did want to ask you to do one thing for me, Kathy, and actually like vocalize the laugh you've written in at the end of this outline, because what I'm seeing is H-U-E, hue, 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 hue. Well,
I wanted it to be a surprise for you, so I didn't put in what it was.
What is it?
Well, I actually pronounce it more like heh, 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 when I do it.
It's like a slightly shorter neck creepy laugh.
You have a good anime pervert laugh.
Thanks?
Yes. You're welcome. A skill that will come in handy in everyday life.
Yeah, so if this episode made you guys feel sad or like you didn't want to hear about sad stuff, don't worry. The next thing we're going to discuss is just manic and exciting, and I am so excited. Hilarious. And I've been deep into the Wikipedia for the past few nights, which is what made me suggest this as the next one.
That's I picked this book, for juxtaposition.
I didn't know it was sad. I'm sorry.
I literally had another book in mind, and I was just like, Ouran High School Host Club, as I slowly pushed the other book off the table, just like, this isn't happening anymore.
I chose not to pick The Hate U Give specifically so this wouldn't happen, and then it did happen.
I have a new roommate moving in soon, and I get Snapchats from her at like 2 a.m. where she's just like, Tamaki, no! So I'm like, I've indoctrinated her. This is great. So, you know, I'm just so excited.
All right. I'm ready to dive into it.
I'm excited. Okay. Well, have a good one.
See you guys next time.